That's right. It's not over until I say it's over. So we've got an hour to go for you. We did some checking on the atomic clock situation that occurred yesterday, where my atomic clock here in the cave just went crazy, jumping hours and going into time. And nobody's admitted to anything, but something happened, and I think there was a signal problem when it was being fed, probably out of Boulder, Colorado. So I'll be back in a moment with final open line calls at Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, the laugh line is 818-817-0021. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up on the air. Good morning. Hi there.
Hi there. Hey, George.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Diane from San Diego with Cassie, the sensitive cockatoo. Dazzling Diane.
Ah, yes. We're gonna interview the cockatoo tonight, aren't we?
There we go. Cassie, are you up for it, kiddo? Come on, baby.
Is she gonna
talk?
I've been
keeping her up all night. I'm trying to. Yes, I have been keeping her up all night, trying to teach her to say coast to coast. Can you say it, Cassie? Coast to coast. She's trying. Yeah, Cassie, you gonna talk? No, don't get stage fright now on me, baby.
I mean, how do I know it's not you playing the part of the bird?
Oh, I know. That's where you have to trust me. That's for sure. Well, as everybody knows, I don't do a very good bird mimic act. So, oh, there we go. Come on, Cassie. It's George. I told you I was gonna call. We're hoping to get through to you tonight. Cassie, say hi.
Hi, Cassie.
Give it a try.
Can you put the phone up to her ear?
Yes. It's absolutely. Oh, it's up there. Cassie, go ahead and talk.
Does a bird have an ear?
Yes.
Hi, Cassie.
She's running on me.
Cassie, say hello.
Hello.
Was that her or was that you?
Pardon me?
Was that you? Who said hello, the bird or you?
That was Cassie saying hello. So her voice sounds like mine. It's incredible. She mimics me all the time. So when I can get her to talk, it sounds just like me. And when I start laughing, she starts laughing.
She can also do a phone ring, too, can't she?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
Can she do a phone ring?
You know, she doesn't do a phone ring. She does a great wolf whistle, though. Oh, there, yeah. Go ahead, tell George.
Yeah. Hey, Cassie, tell her to be a demon.
Come on, baby. You know, it's something when you're working with animals. It's actually up pretty late for her. I've been keeping her up all night, hoping that we could get through to talk to you.
How old is she, Diane?
Cassie's 8 years old, and George, they live 80 to 100 years. That's
my
incredible.
God, that is incredible.
This is a creature you met when you're a little tiny kid. So you have it your whole life. You don't like dogs, cats, they die. That's sad. Yeah, Cassie agrees with that.
Does she add to her vocabulary every year?
She does. And it's incredible. I take her with me on the magic shows I do. So she draws a lot of attention. Cassie is a magician. She actually can do some mind reading. That's right. And she picks cards. It's terrific. Going to talk Nellie and tell George about it? Yes, you love to perform. I produce her magically as well. So I come out on stage wearing a very nice blue gown, nothing around me, and suddenly, boom, Cassie appears, and that's the beginning of the show. So it's a good time.
Can't she sound like a demon, Diane?
Ooh, she can sound like a demon, and George, when she does, every neighbor from a mile around hears her. And believe me, that's what my kids call her. Everybody calls her. It's the demon bird because her squawk is so loud. Yeah, you're going to talk about it now, huh, baby? She can be heard forever. It's crazy.
Hey, Cassie, say coast to coast.
Coast to coast. We're working on that one. Coast to coast. Cassie, can you say coast to coast? She's trying. She's trying.
That's
cute.
Well, you two, you go put her back in her cage.
There she goes. There she was yapping away.
Tell her to tell me goodbye.
Can you say goodbye? Say I love you, George. Say I love you, George. Oh, that's an I love you, boy. That's an I'm a fussy bird.
I love it. Okay, Di, have a good night.
George, you too. We love you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's something. first interview of a bird. But I'm wondering if it was really the bird who made the call and it was Diane who the bird was trying to mimic. Let's go to our laugh line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Ken from San Francisco Bay Area.
Hi, Ken.
I'm a retired fire captain.
Wow. And thank you for your service.
Shortly before I retired, I was captain of the rescue squad. And I knew all our dispatchers because that was part of my responsibilities, was recertifying them every year. And we get a call one night for our squad, and the dispatchers are laughing. And they give us the address, and they said, the dispatcher on the line said, I know you guys can handle it. And the other three dispatchers in the room busted out laughing. So I knew we were in trouble. We get on the air and say we're en route. And one of the dispatchers says, check, rescue en route. You guys can handle it. And they all bust out laughing again. We get to the address. There's a guy standing in front of the apartment. And I step out of the rescue rig and ask him, you know, we've got to call for an unknown medical emergency. Do you know anything about it? He says, yes, it's my roommate. And I says, well, what's the problem? He says, you'll have to see. Meantime, my crew is grabbing a resuscitator and a trauma pack. So he leads me up the stairs. We get to the apartment, walk in the door, and there's a kitchen on the right and a hallway, and we step into the living room. And there in the middle of the living room floor stands his roommate in a pair of orange and white striped boxer shorts. At his feet is a canister vacuum cleaner. And from the canister vacuum cleaner is the hose going into his boxer shorts.
Oh, no.
I stopped, and I'm in shock, and my two crewmen walk in and survey the situation. They immediately bust out in laughter. Well, the poor guy is embarrassed, understandably.
Is he in pain?
So I tell my crewman, out. And my engineer turns to me and says, yeah, Cap, we know. You can handle it. And it's about that time I'm ready to hit him. So they go out, and I said, now, look, we have a Code 3 ambulance en route. Do you really want to go through this again? He says, oh, no. And I said, do you have somebody that can take you to the emergency room? He says, yeah, I guess my roommate can. I says, good. So I reached down, not thinking. Oh, first I got on my portable radio and told the dispatcher, cancel the ambulance.
He's being driven in.
We will handle it. Yeah. And they all bust out laughing on the other end. And this guy's hearing this. And I says, okay, we got that taken care of. And I says, do you really want to walk into the emergency room with 6 feet of hose draped over your shoulder? And he looks at me and he says, well, no, I guess not. So I reached down and unconnected the hose from the vacuum cleaner, and I said, come with me. And I lead him into the kitchen where his roommate is standing. And I says, you got a sharp knife? He says, I got something better than that. I look down and I see the breadboard, so I pull out the breadboard. The guy opens the drawer and he hands me a cleaver. Not thinking, I pick up the cleaver and I pull this young kid up to the breadboard, raise the cleaver, and I happen to look up at him, and his eyes are as big as saucers. So I'm not, it dawned on me what's going through his mind, so I asked politely, you know, how much can I safely cut off? And he says, well, ordinarily, but at the moment, he says, maybe a foot. So I just swung the cleaver.
Oh, my God.
Cut off the hose, and I said, stick this in your pants, and I have your roommate take
you
to the emergency room.
What even makes it funnier is that your personality is pretty straight, isn't it?
Yes. I wasn't thinking what I was saying, but when I reflected on it, look at later, I can understand I probably scared the hell out of the kid.
I could just see you holding that cleaver in your hand, ready to chop that poor kid.
Oh, it was like a deer in headlights moment.
Unbelievable. And then what did the guy say when you came back?
I come downstairs, and my crew is still leaning against the rescue rig, holding their sides, laughing.
I love it. All right. Thanks. My, oh, my, oh, my. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. I'm in my mid-40s, and I live in Lakewood, Ohio. And when I was growing up, there was a bunch of bees around. It was a normal thing, you know, around the clovers and things like that. And for about the past maybe 5 or 10 years, I'm not sure, I've seen hardly any bees. I think I saw maybe a half a dozen last year, and I was thankful for that. I'm just confirming that there is a dearth of bees around.
No question about it. And I think Congress, I don't know what they're going to do about it, but they have finally picked up on talking about this catastrophe. And, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, here we are in St. Louis. We're going into April. There should be bees all over the place, and there's not. I see wasps, but I don't see the honeybees. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
How you doing, George? My name is Tom McCoy.
Hey, Tom. Where are you calling from?
Ohio.
Okay, sir.
I was calling about a childhood happening that took place. Me and a bunch of friends of mine were playing guns one time down there at a little park from where I used to live at. And we think we saw what you'd call a shapeshifter.
Really?
George? Yes, sir.
No, explain that.
Well, it's kind of an odd. I mean, we're sitting there playing guns, and we all of a sudden, there used to be a lake down here at this place we used to live at, and it was down there drinking water. It was like using its hands, George, to drink
like
the water.
Like cups, yeah.
Yeah, and one of my friends just happened to make a noise, and when he did, it kind of snapped around and looked at us. And it had the reddest eyes you ever wanted to see, George.
Now, before it shapeshifted, what was it?
It was a man, but he changed. I mean, he changed right. I mean, it was like it took no more than a second. I mean, how you want to put that? He was stark naked, George, down there at the lake before what he was.
Now, was he bald?
No, sir.
Okay, so he had hair, and he shapeshifted to what?
Well. It's a werewolf, what I'm going to call it, George.
Okay.
And we all just kind of freaked out, and we took off running. And he chased us all the way out of the park area and got back to my house. My mother's even a witness to this. A friend of mine's shirt where he almost caught us before we crossed. He wouldn't come out of the park, George. That's what was weird about it.
Really? He stayed in the park, and you mean he, like, lunged and grabbed part of your friend's shirt?
Yes, sir, and it actually ripped the shirt.
Oh, my God.
And
was he chasing you on 2 feet or four?
When he went to chasing us, George, he was kind of doing, what do you want to call that? It was kind of a 2 to 4.
Yeah, like an ape would when it was running?
Yeah, kind of like that, George.
Okay.
And, I mean, we're freaking out, man. I mean, and I just lived right down the alley from this park, and we all kind of ran up to the house. And when we kind of turned around for a minute, and he'd stopped right before you leave the park, and there's a street light there. So we know he had to be real because he was even casting a shadow for the street light, George. It couldn't have been something from a segment of our imagination.
Now, did Mom call the police and say, there's something out there in the woods there?
Yes, sir, she sure did. Because one of them came and even looked at my friend's shirt. And they took each one of us separately and asked us about it.
Same stories from all three of you?
Yes, sir. Well, there's actually five of us.
Five of
we
us.
Were all, yes, sir, we were playing war down there. And it's one of the things that kind of haunts you as you're growing up. And friends kind of look at you like, you know, yeah, sure, you know. But you can still take every one of us aside and ask each one of us independently about it. And we all tell you the same thing. And this one friend of mine, he was a colored boy. But, George, when we got to my mom's, when we got to my house, he was white.
Well, was there ever any cases of people disappearing there?
Not that I ever heard of, George. I mean, none that I ever heard of growing up. But I mean, there's just like in every town, you know, there's people come up missing or they disappear, you know, or they're just registered as missing and they're never found. I mean, there's a couple of cases like that. But
did your kids ever go down there again?
Yes, sir. I mean, you know, we were stubborn. It was one of the things, you know, hey, we want to go down here and see, you know, what's going on. So the next day we go down, and, I mean, there was, I mean, you figured to leave footprints or something, George. No footprints, no, I mean, impressions, nothing. We went down by where we'd seen him standing by the water, no impression. And, but my mother, she was all shook up about it. I mean, she even went down there, and she knew something was wrong because she'd never seen us that scared in her entire life. And we, you know, we were the kids growing up that there wasn't too much we feared. You know, we'd follow trees, wouldn't bother us the slightest. But, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of us that we still believe it's around. I mean, I ain't heard nothing else about it, no other sightings. I mean, but we actually went to our local library and looked up the history of the town, and there was an incident back years ago, I mean, years ago, and it was actually reported the same, I mean, right in that same area, but it was before the park was built there. The park was built on top of an old Indian burial ground. The whole neighborhood was.
Well, that was something. And I tell you, there's definitely something going on there. Let's take another quick call before the break. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
I wasn't supposed to ask you that. They said everybody is asking you that.
Everybody wants to know. I'm for everybody, I'm okay.
A number of years ago, when I lived in St. Louis, we lived out in the suburbs, and every third backyard had a light pole. And on top of the light pole was a power transformer. Well, if you looked up and down the block, everybody else's transformer had a white light on it, while ours was red. And for some reason, that freaked my Uncle George out. So I went, and I had this number that somebody had given me that you could call to see if your phone was tapped. I called it. It said in a computerized voice, no tap. And I was just wondering what that possibly could have been. Why were we signaled out, so to speak? Why did we have a red light on our transformer when everybody else had a white one?
That is a good question.
Is that one for the ages that no one will ever have the answer to?
That is for the ages that no one will ever have the answer to, ever. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
I have told jokes on and off like most truck drivers when you get to a truck stop. And I had a rookie driver along with me, and she was sitting across the table from me. We went into this restaurant, and I started telling jokes. About a company at that time was hiring fresh out of truck driving school. It was a J.B. Hunt jokes is what we were starting to tell. The waitress comes walking on over and wants to know what we're doing. I says, well, we're just telling jokes. And what made this funny is that this would happen to be one of their fuel stops, and nobody thought anything about it. And the restaurant was basically empty, so she goes, well, what's your all-time favorite J.B. Hunt joke? So I told her my favorite J.B. Hunt joke, and I'll finish the rest of the story. There's this J.B. Hunt driver, fresh out of truck driving school, and he's real proud because he's pulling his first big-time truck stop all by himself. He looked around, and saw these drivers carrying something underneath their arm, and walks up about the third driver, sees, and says, driver, what do you got there? Well, this is my thermos. Every professional truck driver's got one. Well, what's it used for? Well, it keeps hot things hot and cold things cold. Well, that's a heck of a deal. Where can I get one? I'll be selling inside. So he goes inside the truck stop, and he picks himself up the shiniest thermos you ever did see and polishes it up to a high-gloss gleam. Goes into the restaurant, sits down, has something to eat, has his thermos filled, and he's walking out proud as because.
Hold on right there. Hold on right there. I'll get you when I come right back. And final open line calls for the month of March next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go back west to the Rockies, and I'll let you start your whole story again for us, okay?
Okay, all right, we'll start on over here.
Here we go.
Earpiece things in here. I'd blow my air horn, except I'm in a truck stop, but I'd wake up half the truck stop.
We don't want to do that.
We don't want to do that. All right, starting back over from scratch for those who didn't hear it from the beginning. We were sitting in Green River, Utah. and there is a truck stop called Four Winds Truck Stop there. And there isn't a restaurant at that truck stop, but it's a designated fuel stop for a company called J.B. Hunt, which back in the day used to take in fresh out truck driving school, and they were still learning. So there was the brunt of a lot of jokes. You walk next door, and there was a motel with a restaurant, and this restaurant, if it was open, you know, the food was so-so. And I was training a young gal. I was working for another company at that time. And actually, we were running a team, and we went on in there, and I started telling J.B. Hunt jokes because there were J.B. Hunt trucks around. And the waitress comes on over, and she wants to take our order, and she overheard that we were telling jokes. And she goes, well, what's your all-time favorite J.B. Hunt joke? So I said, well, it's this one here, and I'll tell it to you, and then I'll finish the rest of the story with the conversation with the waitress. There's a J.B. Hunt driver, fresh out truck driving school. He's real proud because he's pulling his first big-time truck stop all by himself. And he's looking around, listening to all these drivers carrying something underneath their arms, and walks up about third driver he sees and says, driver, what do you got there? Well, this is my thermos. Every professional truck driver's got one. Well, what's it used for? It keeps hot things hot, cold things cold. Well, that's a heck of a deal. Where can I get one? They sell them inside. So this J.B. Hunt driver walks inside the truck stop. Sure enough, finds himself a shiny thermos, and he goes and polishes it up to a high-gloss clean, sits down in the restaurant, has something to eat, has his thermos filled. He's walking out proud as peacock. He's a professional truck driver. Here come another J.B. Hunt driver, fresh out truck driving school, and he's real proud because he's pulling his first big-time truck stop all by himself. And he's looking around, knows all these drivers carrying something underneath their arm. Walks up to his fellow J.B. Hunt driver, says, driver, what do you got there? Well, this is my thermos. Every professional truck driver's got one. Well, what's it used for? Well, it keeps hot things hot and cold things cold. Well, that's a heck of a deal. Where can I get one? Well, they sell them inside. By the way, what do you got in your thermos? Well, I got a piping hot cup of soup and a glass of iced tea. And the waitress gave it a little cackle and took our drink order, goes into the back room. While she's in the back room, a fully uniformed J.B. Hunt driver sits in the booth right across from us with a stainless steel thermos. Truth, honest to God. This poor little waitress, she comes on out. She sets our drinks on down. She spots the J.B. Hunt driver, or actually somebody else in her section. She hadn't realized it was a J.B. Hunt driver yet. She spins around, spots the J.B. Hunt uniform, spots that stainless steel thermos, and loses it. She's laughing so hard, tears are rolling down her face. She goes running in the back room, embarrassed that she's laughing so loud, and she had one of these cackling laughs that just echoed throughout this whole building. Everybody in the restaurant, my voice carries, everybody in the restaurant had heard the joke, and they started laughing. And the more she laughed, the more the restaurant laughed.
That's
the only one out of the joke is the J.B. Hunt driver sitting there wondering, what did I do?
With this thermos.
And this poor little waitress, she makes it about halfway out. She'd lose it again and go running in the back room. She'd make it about halfway out, lose it, and go back in the room. She made it all the way out over the table, threw down a menu in front of him, and lost it in front of him again and goes running in the back room. This goes on for like 5-10 minutes. And I could tell this poor driver, he's getting a little frustrated. He's like, what is going on here? Finally, I felt sorry for him. I said, driver, it's my fault. How can it be your fault? I told a joke. Well, what kind of joke did you tell? I told him the same joke I just told you guys. For some reason, he didn't think it was fun. True story. And I don't know if that's coincidence or just the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wrong place at the wrong time. Thanks. Let's go to our laugh line now. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi, George. I'm so glad to be on here.
Well, thank you. Go ahead.
We're from Northern Utah. We listen to 570 KNRZ.
Super.
Our young grandson has a habit. He's 5 years old, and he gets up earlier than the grown-ups in the household, and he goes in and turns on the television and turns it on to his public broadcasting station and watches all of the children's shows and keeps him entertained until the grown-ups finally wake up. And they can hear the TV go on and go, okay. He's listening to the TV. And
He's doing his thing.
Doing his thing, yes. One morning he gets up, he turns on the TV, he immediately turns it off, goes running into the grown-up's room, bawling his eyes out. He says, the TV is busted. And they say, well, what did you do? I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. Well, what happened? I don't know. But they're going to tell you on the breaking news at 10.
That's funny.
That's what he did. Now, I have to tell you one thing that I saw this last little while. We had warm weather up here, and I saw a car out with all the windows down and the hood taken off. I mean, they just, all they had protecting them from the elements was their front windshield. And dangling from the rearview mirror was a tree.
A tree?
Yeah. It was one of those air fresheners, but why they would need one in an open convertible, I don't know.
Well, that's because when the convertible top is on.
Oh, I know, but it was just a funny sight. It's like, wait a minute. It was just an air freshener in the fresh air.
You got it.
Does not go together.
No, it's one of those oxymorons.
It was an oxymoron, yes. An air freshener in the fresh air. It was something that, you know, Norman Rockwell should paint. I don't know.
Probably make $1 million doing it.
Yeah, and you could hear that on the breaking news at 10 also.
All right. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Well, you know what? We're wrapping up the month of March, and this is already just a very fast year. And I want to tell you, it's been an incredible month for everybody associated with Coast to Coast. This month started by attending Art Bell's Radio and Records Lifetime Achievement Award. And I want to end the month for us with you hearing a portion of Art's speech accepting that award. I mean, it was a fantastic time for the entire staff of Coast to Coast. Very fantastically emotional for me because this was the first time I had met Art. And I got to tell you, had it not been for him and the things he's done, I wouldn't be here today doing my lifelong dream. And that's giving you this program. So I want you to sit back for just a moment. Listen to Art Bell's acceptance of his Lifetime Achievement Award. And then when we come back, because this was a laugh line night, I'm going to leave you with something that should bring a happy tear to your eye. But here is now Art Bell accepting his Radio and Records Lifetime Achievement Award.
I have the extreme honor to present the 2007 R&R News Talk Lifetime Achievement Award to one of the great icons of broadcasting, Mr. Art Bell.
Well, first I want to thank all the little people. The little gray people. And that line is from Bonnie. Thank you, Bonnie. It's wonderful to be here, and I really do mean thank you all. It's been an amazing journey. This lifetime of mine, and as I think I wrote or answered in the article, in the interview, there's been a lot of joy and happiness, and as you know, tragedy for me. I lost Ramona, the love of my life, and I thought it was over at that point, but it wasn't, and I found this wonderful new woman seated right down there. With our baby, yes, at my age. Her name is going to be Asia, and she was conceived in Hong Kong. It was raining in Hong Kong. It's been such an amazing radio career. I began at a little FM station in Franklin, New Jersey, and I won't further identify it than that. And I read the news. Actually, my career began technically. I was an engineer. And I loved it, and I love ham radio, and I began all that at 12 years old. Then off to Franklin, New Jersey, climbing a mountain to an FM station, where my job was to read the news. And that's how I actually began the broadcasting part of this career. And every now and then, the fellow who owned that radio station, now you'll know why I'm not identifying it, would come in, and he had something about being too close to a mic. And so he would come in during the newscast and yank the chair out from under me. You hear this... boom, that would be me hitting the floor. So I learned not to get too close to a mic. And that was followed by years of what everybody in our industry probably has who's on the air, and that is going from city to city up and down the dial. Probably about 35 stations. And then out of radio, and I decided I'm going to have a life. So I went to work for cable television in Las Vegas. I built what's called the head end, all the processing gear and satellite gear and all the rest of that. And one day somebody came to me from KDWN and said, listen, we know you were in talk radio. Come on, give it a try. And I knew the danger. Nevertheless, ultimately, I tossed away a very good-paying job. I had a whole department under me, a technical department. Went on the air in the afternoons. Decided that wasn't enough. KDWN was a 50,000-watt flamethrower at night, and that's what I wanted. And that's what I got. And that's how all this happened. And I was doing a political radio program at that point, conservative political radio program. And I'm still a conservative. At any rate, one day I just got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't go in there and do another night of politics. At that point, I was doing six-hour radio program, 6 days a week. And so I said, the hell with it. And I invited somebody named John Lear, the son of Bill Lear, Learjet Lear. And he did a program on aliens. And I loved it. I just ate it up. The industry, which at that time really was my boss, Claire Reese was her name. Mean, mean lady. But she taught me everything. And I got called into her office, and boy, she read me the riot act. Have you lost your mind? And I heard a lot of that. And that was at that actually was toward the beginning of syndication. And of course, there's Alan Corbeth, who was with me from the beginning of the syndication. And I'm sure he had his moments of worry as well. A lot of people thought I'd lost my mind. And then the ratings came in. And turns out, I guess, that people wanted to hear something a little bit different. And so I began doing it full time. And day by day, week by week, I began to increase the content. The number of telephone calls coming into that radio station got so bad that the hotel, which previously had been paying for the 800 lines, threw up their hands and said, we can't handle it. I had seven lines ringing all night long, and the surveys kept coming in as number one. And so that's how it happened. And from there, the syndication grew, 100, 200, 300, 400 stations. And then, of course, we eclipsed 500, I think, 530, somewhere in that area we managed. So it was an amazing time. It's been an amazing life. And so I'm not going to sit here and list everybody who helped, because so many in this room aided in so many ways. Craig Kitchen stuck with me through some incredibly difficult times in my life. And I don't think any career of this sort happens without really difficult times. I think they're built in. As I read about these people who achieve some level of fame or whatever, they all seem to have tragedy that comes with it. And so here I am, and I want to thank you all so very much. I feel so out of place here in Los Angeles. Looking around, I'm used to my desert, where I can look 40 miles and see absolutely nothing. So as the famous line goes, folks, from here, I'm going to take my new wife, Erin, and our baby, Asia, who will be here in June, to Disneyland. And that's where we're going. Thank you so very much.
Well, that was Art Bell receiving his Radio and Records Lifetime Achievement Award. That's how our month of March began, and that's how I wanted, basically, the month of March for us to end, with the exception of this, because it was a weekend of laughter for us with the laugh line. Those of you will get one shot at this year. Here you go.
Hey, Mark, excuse me. I'm on my way to 3768. Kind of got hung up. It's raining out here. I'm on my way into Dallas. Jerry's probably going to be calling you to find out where I'm at if he can't get a hold of me, I'm sure. So thought, whoa. Man, I just had a wreck right in front of me. This guy ran a red light and hit four old ladies in an Impala. just kind of clipped him, turned him around right in front of me, man. That was close. Oh, now this guy's getting out of his car. He's got a white shirt on with a tie and a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He's throwing his hands up in the air like it was their fault. Oh, hold on. He's going over their window. She's rolling down the window. Oh, man, I think she sprayed him with pepper spray, man. He's holding his face, and he's on his knee. She's getting out. She's beating him with an umbrella. The other women are getting out, too. There's one woman with a little black purse. She's tomahawking him, man. She looks like a Sunbelt 20-horsepower jackhammer. Blah, blah, blah. We got another woman She's hitting him like he's got a cattle prod, man. She's got an umbrella and she's sticking it in his side. Oh, there's another one. It's a little woman. Looks like Mother Goose. She beat him. She's got this U-bit bag. She's got this U-bit bag. It's huge. It's about the size of her. She's about 4 foot nothing. She hit him over the head. Everything went all over the place. Her Bible fell. She just hit him in the head with a Bible. She picked this Bible up and she lifted it way over her head. It was a hardback NVI version. They're still beating the out of this guy. She picked his Bible up and raised it up above her head and just beamed the guy. This guy's not getting up. They're still hitting him. The one with the little black purse is still all pieces of it. okay, he's up on the car. The little woman just beamed him again with that big bag. He's running to his car. He's out of here. The little bitty Mother Goose woman. She's stuck into him and he's driving off. I wish you would have been here, man. This is too good.
It is infectious, huh? For Kiris Coburn, Dan Galati, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, and his soon-to-be wife, Julie. They got engaged over the last day or so. Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smithy, and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, have a great weekend, everyone.